there are times when the advertising that is associated with this program, which, by the way, I do not pick. I have no say in. I typically dislike, and I'm not paid a nickel from, is repulsive. The Bible stick is probably as repulsive as any that I've ever heard, where they're saying, give a soldier peace of mind and the comfort in the battlefield with your Bible stick. And it just turns my stomach, makes my skin crawl, that Christians would depict their God in these warlike terms, or to pretend that their God is associated with an institution designed to kill, destroy. Now, there is something, though, that came after that, that just, well, at least he's in the right company. The infamous Doc Wallach, who is a complete fraud. He's not a medical doctor. He's a veterinarian. And he has been featured, and he was being compared to Benny Hinn. Benny Hinn is the religious fraud that has dinner and a show, for so long as you're willing to pay a small fortune, flies around in his private jet, and he is the one that hits people on the forehead, knocks them down, and they flail and flitter all over the ground, who has never, by his own admission, ever healed anyone. But, you know, he puts on this pretend healing show to steal money out of people's pockets. And then you've got George Norrie, who's the king of all manner of myths on Coast to Coast, on that show, and all manner of kooky conspiracy theories and extraterrestrials and alien invasions and body snatchers and out-of-body experiences. So you've got the king of kooks, George Norrie. Benny Hinn, who is the most successful religious con man of our day. And Doc Wallach, who is the ultimate proprietor of snake oil, all being linked together. What a group. Don't buy tickets. Hello, Kirk.
Good morning.
Excuse my rant.
That's okay. You obviously don't care for carnivals, huh?
You know, if a carny is going to be, is putting on a show where you know that what you're...
At least they should say this is a show.
This is a, they're good enough to say this is a show. But Doc Wallace doesn't claim it's a show. Benny Hinn doesn't claim it's a show. George Norrie at least admits that it's a show, but then has a dating site for those who are like lack-of-minded fools. So, I'm sorry. When you put on your show, you know, the carny, most, I've never seen a carny say that my show is all about doing things in God's name and God's honor and that kind of stuff. And, of course, Benny Hinn does, and the carny doesn't say, "I want you to do what I'm going to do," as opposed to going to the doctor. And George or Doc Wallace does.
You know, Yada, I've had Benny Hinn pushing on my forehead.
You have actually.
Yes, I have actually had Benny Hinn's hand pushing on my forehead, and I pushed back, so I didn't feel like falling over.
Wow, you went to a Benny Hinn revival meeting, and you were one of those on stage?
He came to my church many years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, like a lifetime ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Ooh. Sorry to admit. I guess I should be more hesitant to admit it, but yeah.
No, you know, I went to and actually worked on behalf of Billy Graham Crusades. You know, so I gave the keynote speech at the General Assembly for the Presbyterian Church in the United States. So, you know, I have done my share of stupid affiliations as well.
Wow. I did some after Westminster. But the,
wow, yeah.
but anyway.
Yeah. That's a threesome to draw to, man. Can you imagine having Doc Wallace, Benny Hinn, and yeah. George Norrie in your hand and thinking, boy, man, I've really got a winning hand?
Three jokers.
Yeah, I've got three jokers. I've got three jokers. Oh, that's a winning hand.
But by the way, on the news, did you notice that the news story said, there was a news story that said the Taliban were operating from the hospital, which was the first allegation made before they apologized for the attack as a mistake. The first excuse that was made was that they were Taliban operating there. Then they changed it to, oops, it was a mistake. Now they're giving this news story, probably in preparation to go back to the original argument.
Yeah, and what's amazing is the Doctors Without Borders, who are credible individuals, so there was no Taliban operating there. And America admitted in the second go-round that there were no Taliban operating there. And you know how many Taliban were killed there?
Now, Yada, who are you going to believe? The American State Department or some silly doctor sacrificing his life and services and energies for halfway around the world for pro bono purposes?
That's a real tough question, having studied the lying nature of the U.S. military. You know, what's so amazing, too, is that nobody could put the pieces together. There was the most recent study, comprehensive evaluation of the U.S. military, conducted by the U.S. War College. After 5 years of studying and interviewing thousands of officers and enlisted men, said that the culture of dishonesty in the U.S. military was extraordinary, and it's so deep and extensive that most in the military were prone to tell a lie under almost all circumstances, and that there was absolutely no affinity for the truth amongst U.S. military officers.
Right.
It's a culture of delusion and deception.
Yeah, and you know, that's funny, you know, and telling the truth takes something. It takes something called courage. You know, and if you're land of the free and home of the brave, you'd think you might have an affinity for the truth, because you have to be brave to tell the truth.
You know, you've got to be moral. Well, you don't necessarily have to be moral. I mean, the truth is just, this is the truth. And this is, there's, you have to be immoral to deliberately, knowingly, purposefully deceive, because you don't think that the truth serves your interests.
Right, right.
And that's the culture of the U.S. military. It's a culture of deception. And while most human institutions are cultures of deception, all religions are cultures of deception, most politics is about deception. Here you've got the military, of course, is a culture of deception, but there's a difference with the military. You know, they have the most powerful weapons in the world. When you have people who are deliberately dishonest, who can't make a moral decision, who can't tell the truth, wielding those kind of weapons, it's frightening. You know, Jeb Bush today came out and he said that he's trailing in the polls. Donald Trump now has about 40% share of the Republican vote. Ben Carson is half of that at about 20. And then Jeb Bush is like fifth in the line, and he has about four to five. And so Jeb Bush is desperate. So the only thing that a desperate man does that can't garner any support on his own is he tears other people down. And so he's out tearing Trump down by saying, you know, he's running this campaign like he's an actor on a Celebrity Apprentice, like it's a reality television show, and you can't trust him with the launch codes for nuclear weapons. And you just shake your head and say, and you're trustworthy? A man that can't win on your own merits, that now has to tear somebody else down, and we're supposed to trust you? You know, at least Donald Trump has something to live for. He has something to protect. What do you have, Jeb?
Yeah, I actually would trust Trump, because he's a man who appreciates infrastructure and everything it takes to build something as opposed to destroying.
And to make a decision that you have to live with.
Right. Right.
You know, I'm not going to trust any politician, and I'm not going to trust anybody in the military. But if you were really telling the truth, and you said you can't trust the nuclear launch codes with somebody, it would be the U.S. military. That's who you can't trust.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's funny, and especially like to impugn Trump's trustworthiness over this. You know, especially in retrospect of the fact that Walker Bush had the code. It's like, I thought they would trust Trump a lot more than I trust G.W. Bush, you know?
May have been the dumbest president of all time. And a man who deliberately lied about his reasons for invading Afghanistan and Iraq. The man who created the mess that the world's in today because of his invasion of Iraq and the stupidity of that invasion. And then Jeb Bush wants to uphold what he did, saying he was a great president. And oh, come on. It's repulsive.
Doesn't Jeb Bush seem exceedingly weak to me, like kind of lacking in spine? Like he's smarter than his brother, but he actually seems like kind of aged, a little burnout, and sort of weak of will or spine to me. I don't know, that's just my
thought. The whole Bush family gives me the creeps. Just gives me the willies. The whole family, I wouldn't want to be in the, don't even want to be in the same country that they are. They're just disgusting.
Yeah.
Kirk, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Revelation, because we're here talking about Zechariah and the integration between Zechariah and the Olivet Discourse, which was is nothing more than a walk through the prophecies of Zechariah is what the Olivet Discourse is all about. And so it's amazing that so many people have a difficult time understanding it when, you know, it's all laid out for us. This kind of reminds me of, you know, where's the best depiction of what occurred on Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim in 33 CE? Is it in the eyewitness accounts, or is it in the Psalms of Dode written 1,000 years earlier?
What really happened, and they're just saying this is what we saw, which is not necessarily understanding. It just means I'm reporting the fact.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, in the quote-unquote eyewitness accounts, which, by the way, in the four quote-unquote Gospels, only two of them were eyewitness accounts, and one of them doesn't talk much about what happened prior to Pesach, so you're really left with only Matanyah. They don't even say a word about what occurred on Matzah.
No.
Not a word. And they've got no connection to what was happening on that day or the next. But if you want to look in the writings of Dode, the 22nd and 88th Psalm, he does. The reason I mentioned that the best depictions of what occurred on Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim occur in the writings of Dode's Psalms 1,000 years in advance, and in Yeshayah, 700 years in advance of their fulfillment, is that Yahweh can take his prophets forward in time because he's not stuck in the ordinary flow of time, so they can provide an eyewitness account that is informed and precisely accurate, inspired by him to explain the events that are unfolding. And I see Revelation, Kirk, the same way.
Right.
Most of Revelation is derived from Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And in Daniel, the Malach Gabriel provided Daniel with very precise insights as to what was going to happen over the future of the world. And it really was the future of the world from around 500 BCE to the present day.
Right.
He went through the whole thing. In fact, beyond the present day, through 2033. And so if you want to understand Revelation, you first have to understand Daniel.
Yeah. Well, the things that I knew studying recently has been, although I went to Revelations, I'm pretty familiar with Daniel as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not that familiar with Revelations for a long time, and I was trying to put them together in a sequence because I was having a difficult time trying to figure out how America and Europe can survive past 2029. I mean, up to 2030.
Yeah, I can't. I see them in 2030. I see America, Europe, Russia gone.
Yeah, and most of Western Europe because of the four things that are going to happen, and it's just
Right.
Horrible.
Right. And, yeah, the four things. You're speaking of nuclear war.
Nuclear war. That's
the Spinthos, the Pophis, the asteroids going to hit.
That one, you have the volcano on the
right.
Canary.
Yeah, the landslide, the volcanic island that's off the coast of Spain that's going to slip into the sea and cause tidal waves both in Europe and the United States.
Mm-hmm. Then you have the great star that's going to fall.
The asteroid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not really a star. It's an asteroid,
well,
according to the Greek anyway.
Same word in the Greek.
The asteroid is going to strike. It's named Apophis, which is the name of MN 2004. And it's the exact day that it's depicted in the midpoint of the tribulation striking the Earth is the time that it's that very day is when it is depicted to come within a whisker of hitting the Earth, well inside of even our satellite rings. And it's a continent destroying asteroid. Yahweh says that it will be, and he doesn't speak Greek, but the Greek translation is balo, nudged. I should probably look up, just now that we know that everything was spoken of in Hebrew, look up the Hebrew equivalent and to discern exactly how its orbit, and you could affect its orbit. It's another meteor out there or just space debris that moves it. I mean, even the tiniest fraction.
We've been practicing in that whole maneuver.
Yeah, in fact, NASA is so concerned about Apophis that it has devoted hundreds of millions of dollars to that specific asteroid to nudge it out of its path, because its likelihood of hitting is enormous. And of course, God says it's going to. So, those are the three issues. What's the fourth that you say is affecting?
Well, right after that, you have what only thing I can describe as a nuclear winter, because the crops are
going
to die, and the sun, you can't see the sun for all
right.
the reasons.
Yeah, well, that's, I think,
the
yeah, so the fourth, so we're on the same page. The fourth is really a derivative of the first three.
Yeah.
The first three are all going to cause that nuclear winter, where the sun is blotted out by the debris that's thrown up into the atmosphere. But anyway, the northern hemisphere,
yes,
of the Earth is uninhabitable.
So we're looking at a 14-year time frame. If anybody's listening, I mean, this is
How many times have we said that? I know that Americans and Western Europeans and people around the world have a difficult time getting out of the normalcy view of the world, that this is how it was yesterday and the day before yesterday, so that's how it's going to be tomorrow. But we're here to tell you that 15 years from now, 16 years from now,
this ain't going to be here.
It isn't going to be here. I mean, it's beyond economic collapse. It's beyond military collapse. It's just life will not be supported here. So it is true that the depictions of the events in Revelation show a destruction of the Americas, the Northern Hemisphere, really. Americas, most of Europe and Western Russia is the area that is being destroyed. It's one-third of the Earth's surface, uninhabitable because of these three events and their consequence. The rest of the Earth is no fun to live on either.
Mm.
But, you know, America is going to suffer a worse calamity than just the complete collapse of its faith-based currency and its mountain of debt and its military adventurism that has been so counterproductive. There's more to it than just giving up your freedoms and allowing your government to spy on you and to completely ignore all of your constitutional rights. And it's this is 2030. That's 15 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And 15 years from now is utter destruction. I mean, we're not talking about all the bad things that happen between now and then, like World War III.
Yeah. There was a report, and I can't verify everything I read, but they of over 100 in 1 month's time, a busload of over 100,000, like I think it was 110,000 young Muslim men were transported from the Mexican border to the Midwest of Oklahoma and Kansas. And it was, and people were, and the reason it came up, people were trying to, and well, like I say, I won't verify it yet because I didn't go back and check all the gas stuff, but I kind of believe it, just watching and listening to it. Some people tried to, charter a bus, and they said, well, we don't have any buses to charter. And they said, well, how about for next week or next day or whatever? And it went on, and we're booked up for a solid month. And they calculated, my God, there's 80-something buses going full time.
Right.
And they couldn't get it. And people observed them, watched them, and they were loading them up with Middle Eastern men.
So these are Muslims that have fled Syria or Afghanistan or Libya. Or Iraq, or Egypt, and it was easier to get into Mexico, and we made a deal with the Mexicans of we'll take them.
Yeah, I guess what I don't know. I'm projecting here. Maybe that's what they were building the FEMA camps for, so they have the landing place. Anyway.
Well, boy, I hope that's not. Hope it's not accurate.
I hope that's totally inaccurate, but boy.
But you can easily see why you didn't. Well, Christianity was born out of a hatred for Israel and Yehudim, not recognizing hypocritically that the individual they claim was the founder of their religion was a Israelite who never left Israel, who was a Yehudim. And that 100% of the Torah prophets and Psalms that they've got relegated to the Old Testament of their Bible was written for and by Yehudim and by Israel, and that Yahweh says that Israel is my favorite place. That Christians have been anti-Israel from the very beginning, but. There is no one, no religion in the history of humanity that has been as anti-Semitic as is Islam.
No.
And so to allow a religion that overtly worships Satan as God and that calls for the utter destruction of Israel, Yahweh's chosen people and place, into the United States by the hundreds of thousands, even by the millions, is... Makes America God's foe. But it's, why should we be surprised? It's, Yeshaya 17. First, Yeshaya 14 is the depiction of Hasatan coming out of a place called Babel. And the Christians come out of a place called Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Same word. And that it means with the Lord. And, of course, Christians are with their Lord. The Lord in Hebrew is Baal, and it's Ba. Means with and in, and so it's with the Lord. And
I have a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So there you are. You are dealing with Yeshaya 14, speaking of Satan coming out of and being associated with Babel, and then you've got Yeshaya 17 talking about the war that leads to World War III. The war in Syria that leads to World War III, which begins with Muslims flooding into Israel in numbers beyond what Israel can defend itself against, and that how their movement into Israel is made possible by giving the Muslims the West Bank, which is what America is there to broker. And that following giving the West Bank, they flood into Israel, begins World War III. The whole world is consumed by it, and that Muslims go throughout the world, as we're witnessing now, by the millions, and the world is caught up in world war. One quarter of the world's population dies. And Yahweh immediately thereafter tells us that that the country that is mostly responsible for this and is being warned as being egregious is the United States. And Yahshua 18. These things all fit together with America's destruction. God is not blessing America, no matter how many seventh inning stretches are filled with the song. He despises America. Now, he's not going to destroy America.
Well, that was one of the points about this quite interesting, because he's going to let you run his course. He did say he would protect Israel in time, but those are his people. So he's going to live up to his deal, but he's going to let us kill each other as many millions as we can do.
Yeah, and let natural forces wipe us out. I mean, there's going to be massive earthquakes, massive hurricanes, and tornadoes.
I mean, he's not doing. He warned you that was happening, so I mean, he would have saved you from that as well if you'd paid attention. But he's not doing that. This is the way the earth works. Time to time, meteors hit. Time to time, things.
Yeah.
Hit. You know,
yeah, the timing of this one, though, you know, is part of a calculation. This one was timed to hit right at the time that it's going to hit. It cannot be an accident that Apophis is going to hit the Earth right at the midpoint on Friday the 13th. April, Friday the 13th, at the exact midpoint of the tribulation in 2030, 3 days, 3.5 years before the tribulation ends, on Yom Kippurim and Sukkah in 2033. That is not a coincidence.
No.
So that was part of the calculation of the earth, because that of creation, to bring it all to a close. I mean, it's not a coincidence that the Burkle impact crater is timed to initiate the flood back in Noah's day. These aren't accidents.
It wasn't a secret.
And it wasn't a secret, and it's not an accident. And there was a means to escape, just as there is a means to escape that which is coming. Just as Noah and his family had to listen to Yahweh's instructions, accept them, and then act upon them, Yahweh has provided us with instructions that we have to read, think about, understand, and accept, and act upon if we want to avoid all of this too. It's called the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's found in the Torah.
Any one of the three are terrible.
Oh, those of the upcoming events?
I was reading about the...
And actually, there are four, because this is my way of thinking anyway. You know, the fourth one that you mentioned, I think, is really just a consequence of the three. It is a fourth thing that is depicted, so you know, you can categorize it either way. But there's something that precedes the three that you mentioned: the falling off of the side of a volcanic island that causes a great tsunami, the hit of the asteroid, which could be the tied to the same event, and then the nuclear holocaust that grows out of what I think is really the first major event. The first major event in the and during the tribulation is the relinquishing of the West Bank to the Muslims, so that they flood into Israel in greater numbers than Israel can hold them off, and that leads to the Magog War. The Magog War is not isolated to Israel.
No, it is a world war.
It is a world war. And so the first major calamity of the tribulation affecting America will be the Magog War. And the Muslims in America, of course, are going to rise up against America, even though America is arming and abetting the Muslims. In fact, there's a story right here that the Free Syrian Army is now extraordinarily, in fact, they call it the 101st Division of the Free Syrian Army. As if there's even more than 101 people in the Free Syrian Army. And they said, oh, now we're perfectly, beautifully armed to go against this Islamic State incursion on Aleppo. Guess who is there defending Aleppo against the onslaught of the Islamic State?
Well, I'm sure it's the Russians.
It's Hezbollah.
Oh, Hezbollah, well there.
So we're arming Hezbollah there, and so God knows who we're providing the weapons to. and those weapons are going to be used against us. You know, the Hillary Clinton was saying today that, you know, she's certain that none of the conspiracy theories on Benghazi are true. Well, here's the theory on Benghazi that is true. America bombed Libya into submission, took out the secular dictator, and then armed the Muslim jihadists to the teeth. And the Muslim jihadists that we were arming and that we empowered by taking the government out used the weapons that we provided to kill Americans. That's the truth. And Hillary Clinton knew that was the truth, and she lied about it and blamed the attack on a movie that had nothing to do with it. And so why would we be surprised that our nation is leading us directly into the teeth of World War III?
Why is that so hard to see?
Yeah. And particularly now that we have Russia and China on the side of Iran and Syria, and Europe and the United States on the side of Sunni Islam, Saudi Arabia and Turkey against them. So why should we be surprised that America, Europe, Russia as we know it are destroyed? And life as we know it here will cease to exist just 15 years from now.
Wow.
But you don't have to be here to being caught up in this deluge of delusion and destruction. So let's return in the few minutes we have left today, and we'll resume this tomorrow. But it says that, "And Yahweh, my God, will return." This is from Zechariah. "And all of those who are set apart with you," this is now in Zechariah's voice. Zechariah means "remember Yahweh." So as we look at the return, Christians would call this the second coming, but it's really the seventh return of Yahweh. Who's coming? I didn't see a Jesus there. I didn't see a Christ there. I don't see a Lord there. I see a Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh there. And so Zechariah is watching this future event, and he says, "And Yahweh, my God, will return, and all of those who are set apart with him." No saints with him. Doesn't say Christians with him.
No.
Doesn't say good people with him.
No.
Doesn't say religious people with him. All of the religious with him. Doesn't say all the obedient with him.
All of the Catholics.
It says all of those who are Kadashim. Set apart.
Yes, Kadosh.
Yeah, from Kadosh. All Kadosh means is set apart.
Set apart.
Set apart to what? Set apart from what? Set apart from the institutions of man. Set apart from the religion and societal customs of man. Set apart to whom? Set apart to Yahweh by way of his covenant. "And he will send forth his messengers with a great trumpet, and they will gather together from the four winds, from one end to the other extreme." This is now Yahusha speaking of this event. All he's telling us is what was already in Zechariah, written 400 years earlier. That's Matthew 24:31. And then Yahweh says, this is the part that was just so telling that, God, everyone misses. "And your soul should respond and answer, appearing before and approaching the maternal manifestation of the light, purifies and enlightens to approach Yahweh." And the day he's going to return is the day that we are told over and over that this is an invitation, and then you should answer the invitation and approach and come before the Isha, the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light.
On Yom Kippur. Yeah.
To approach Yahweh and Yom Kippur. So he's telling you, I gave you that instruction for this particular moment. Because if you're not enveloped in the maternal aspect of Yahweh's light, the set-apart spirit, you're going to be incinerated on his return.
Let me ask a question, if I may. No, short time is short, but there's so few people that will respond at that point because there's so few people left, and they've gone through all of tribulation.
You know, at this point, at this point, the decision has already been made. I mean, there's really
taking that mark.
The only people I think open to making a final decision at this point are Yehudim and Yisrael. I think that the rest of the earth, because at the midpoint of the tribulation, you have to take sides.
Yeah.
You either are with the adversary against Yahweh, and you're pledging your allegiance, and you're taking on the mark of the beast. What's the beast?
The beast
that Yahweh describes. You've got to look at Revelation from the perspective of Daniel, who is the beast.
Yeah.
That tramples the whole world at this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
The derivative of Imperial Rome, right? It's an outgrowth of Imperial Rome. And so it's the Roman Catholic Church and Christianity, which is the outgrowth of Imperial Rome. And at this point, you either take the mark of the beast or you you wear the sign of Yahweh. What's the sign of Yahweh?
The upright pole thing.
Yeah, the covenant. Circumcision in the covenant.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And the signpost along the way, Zion, is the Torah. And so, at this point, you're right. Amongst Goyim, it's over.
Yeah.
Amongst Yehudim, he's telling his children to accept his invitation. He's poured out the Spirit to make this possible. He just said that in previous statements. He poured out the set-apart Spirit on them for this specific purpose, but they still have to choose to accept her, to approach her. And then here is Matanyah, Yosha speaking. He says, "Behold, I have told you in advance." Now, when he says that, and he's telling them this for the first time, doesn't that mean that he inspired Zechariah?
Mm-hmm.
"Behold you, I have told you in advance, for just as a brilliant shining constellation rising as a star in the east to bring forth light, causing it to shine brightly, to the far extent of the setting sun in the west, so in this manner shall the presence of the Son of Man be."